Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, February 15th, 2026. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We're going to begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: William Eugene Adams, Michael Anthony Curtis, Bruce Edward Dahlgren, James Fagan Johnson, Umakant Dayaram Mahajan, Susan Maldonado, Sylvia Frampton Mulcahy, Yvonne Peterson, Dorothy Petrie, known as Dodie, Jan Talton, Craig Walker, Thomas Maurice Whalen, and Robert Allen Williams. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. This article is entitled Job Growth Stronger Than Expected. It was written by Ray Covarrubias, Jr. for the Arizona Republic. The U.S. economy added 130,000 jobs in January, stronger than expected after months of slowing growth. The unemployment rate held at 4.3%, according to the new federal data that was released on Wednesday. The report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows hiring picked up after the slowing late last year. But the report also revised last year's job gains sharply lower. In Arizona, the job market remains steady, though growth has slowed from the fast pace seen after the pandemic. Here is a look at job growth across the nation and how state economists say Arizona is likely to see effects. Many economists expected a weak hiring. A private payroll company, ADP, estimated only 22,000 jobs were added in January, but the official report showed 130,000 new jobs. Healthcare added the most jobs with 82,000. Social assistance and construction also grew. Federal government jobs fell by 34,000. Financial jobs dropped by 22,000. Average hourly pay rose 0.4% in January. So over the past year, wages are up 3.7%. Doug Walls, who is a state economist for the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity, called the report generally positive. He said, quote, "It's a healthy number," unquote. Of that, it's what he was talking about, the 130,000 job increase. He noted that hiring has slowed compared to earlier in the recovery, but that it did remain solid. The January report also included yearly updates that lowered past job estimates. Total job gains for 2025 were cut from 584,000 to 181,000. The job count for March 2025 was lowered by nearly 900,000. This means that hiring last year was weaker than first reported. Walls said these yearly updates are normal, but the large drop shows the slowdown that began in the second half of last year. Now, what it could mean for Arizona. Arizona's January job numbers won't be released until early April, but several national trends mirror what the state has seen recently. Healthcare and social assistance has been strong in Arizona, just like in the nation. Construction also grew nationwide in January. Arizona construction ended 2025 in good shape, although higher interest rates have slowed housing. Financial sector unemployment declined nationally, while Arizona has posted modest gains in that sector more recently. Federal job cuts seen nationally could affect Arizona in the coming months, but it's not yet clear how much. Walls said, quote, "We'll have to wait for the state-level release," unquote. Beyond headline growth, Walls said that he will watch job openings, hiring rates, and unemployment claims. These numbers can show early signs of change. Layoffs have stayed stable in both the U.S. and Arizona. If jobless claims rise for several months, that could signal weakness. But for now, the data shows a labor market that is cooling but still expanding, both nationally and in Arizona. And that was the article by Ray Covarrubias, Jr., Job Growth Stronger Than Expected. There's another article in the economy section of the paper. Influencers Go Viral with Budget Advice. Now, this was written by Betty Lynn Fisher for the USA Today. Does it work to cut back on things like a daily Starbucks run or DoorDash delivery to help you save money? Two influencers who post frugal budgeting content on TikTok are going viral with some suggestions for people to cut costs. They got a lot of reactions from followers, both positive and negative. The USA Today spoke to both of the TikTok influencers, as well as financial experts, for their comments and advice. Rochelle Beninston, a 31-year-old elementary school teacher who likes to share frugal living tips with her social media audiences, said on one of her TikTok videos, quote, "You need to live incredibly below your means. I'm talking survival mode," unquote. Beninston, who goes by Rach, told her followers that meant they couldn't DoorDash their favorite sushi spot, they might have to watch NFL games from home, and they might need to come up with a frugal hobby. This year, to set yourself up for success, you are not going to spend frivolously. That's a quote that she said in her video, which was posted on December 30th of 2025. Beninston was direct in her call-outs at times. Quote, "Press on, girlies. You might have to use your regular nail polish on your bare nails. Acrylic Gel X Queens. You might have to get some press-ons. I'm not saying to stop, but I'm saying to cut back," unquote. Beninston also suggested getting water when dining out, clipping coupons, and getting rid of or donating items that you haven't touched in 6 months. Now, her advice was met with responses from commenters about who said how much they loved her advice, and then they shared their own tips. But there were also some critics. One critic said, quote, "You can't budget your way out of poverty. The solution, sadly, is to increase your income. That's it," unquote. In an interview with USA Today, Beninston said she thinks there are ways everyone can save money or cut back, even if they are struggling financially. She said, quote, "I think everyone should have a goal," unquote. She added that you might be surprised when you really look at what you spend. And she said she's following her own advice. But she said, "I'm definitely human." Her goal is to save $10,000 by the end of the year and not spend it. In 2025, she had a goal of $5,000. She met it, she said, but then she spent it all. Beninston, who lives in Boston, said she was using rideshare and meal delivery services so often that when she took a close look at her bank account, she was stunned. Last year, she spent $400 on Uber and Lyft. So in December and January, she started taking the bus more often. Zofie Peacock, a 26-year-old social media influencer in Salt Lake City, shared a long list of ways that she and her husband would be cutting back on their spending this year in her viral video. That included cutting out her $8 daily coffee, stopping her impulse buying on Amazon, spending money on quality items instead of dupes that don't last, and cutting back on her gym membership. But Peacock also said that she and her husband find some non-negotiables that they would not give up, like eating out. That viral video was posted on December 28th of 2025. She told USA Today that she and her husband want to try to save $50,000 this year with their cuts and $100,000 in the next 2 years. They want to buy a house and have a baby. Peacock's online content initially focused on her dogs, but has now turned into tips about frugal living. When asked how they would meet their lofty goal, Peacock, who is a swim coach, said her husband has a good-paying job, and the couple also make and sell dog treats via their social media channel. She said she has made the video to hold herself accountable for cutting her spending. And since the beginning of January, Peacock said she's made her own coffee at home instead of doing her daily $8 coffee run. Now, what do the financial experts say? Well, the advice of two influencers are offering isn't bad, but it's understandable that there have been some critics who responded negatively. Josh Brooks, a certified financial planner with Exponential Advisors LLC in Weatherford, Texas, had some advice for USA Today. The backlash to the latte factor advice is valid because you can't use frugality as the only way out of a systemic income deficit. He emailed some comments about advice to cut a coffee or latte habit in order to save money. Similarly, if your fixed cost, like rent, health care, and debt, exceed your income, cutting the $200 DoorDash habit will not solve poverty. Quote, he said, quote, suggesting otherwise feels tone-deaf to those facing genuine economic hardship, unquote. Then he went on and said, quote, however, the influencers aren't entirely wrong. They just apply the advice too broadly, unquote. Robert Wang, a certified financial planner with Claro Advisors Incorporated in Boston, told USA Today that having a spending plan is like being on a diet. Quote, it will only work if it's sustainable and reasonable. Many people want quick results and thus will be disappointed by the small wins, unquote. He said the most effective diets are moderate, and by people who are motivated to continue, no matter how difficult or uncomfortable it gets. And then he went on and said, quote, that's how I view budgeting. It's not primarily the $4 you save by not buying coffee, but the ability and willingness to sacrifice something from present you so future you can benefit, unquote. And that was the article, Influencers Go Viral with Budget Advice. And those were the two articles from the economy section of the paper. Time for us to move on over and take a look at what's on the front page of the sports section. From the front page of the sports section, can Suns survive tough West and make playoffs? This was written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic. The realist in Phoenix Suns head coach Jordan Ott did not allow him to fully enjoy winning his first NBA Coach of the Month award for January. He sees it as a testament to where the Suns are as a team, but he knows the regular season ends in April, not February. He said, quote, we play our own style of basketball. We're building something that is going to hopefully lead to success down the road. That's where it feels good. It feels good that we're on the right path, but we know how quickly this thing can change, unquote. Phoenix, with a record of 32-23, is trying to complete one of NBA's surprise stories in 25-26 with a playoff appearance. Seventh in the Western Conference and only two games out of fourth, the Suns have already exceeded their 25-26 win total that was set by sportsbooks last summer, and they still have 27 games left in the regular season. FanDuel put Phoenix's over-under win total at 31.5. BetMGM and DraftKings set it at 30.5. So outside of the sports books, Bleacher Report predicted the Suns would finish 25-56, while ESPN projected the team to win 31.8 games, ranking them 26th out of the 30 teams. Suns team owner Matt Ishbia tweeted last month, quote, "Always fun to see what the so-called experts thought about the Suns before the season. Proof of what we're building here in Phoenix, and we're just getting started," unquote. NBA.com ranked the Suns 13th in its West preseason power rankings. The league's general managers didn't even have the Suns reaching the play-in tournament. Suns five-time All-Star Devin Booker said last month, quote, "We know what the people said, but we also know the talent that we have in here. The chemistry that we built before training camp even started. We never put an expectation on anything. We just want to come out here and play the right way. And that's what we've been doing this year," unquote. Well, what will it take to make the playoffs? Well, the Suns likely will need at least 11 more wins to assure themselves at least a play-in spot, given how the West has shaken out the previous four seasons. And that won't be easy when considering they have the ninth toughest remaining schedule, according to Tankathon, based on their opponents' records. The average win total for West play-in teams from 21-22 through 24-25 was 43. The San Antonio Spurs had their worst record of those play-in teams during that stretch. They were at 34-48 back in 21-22. 11 of the 16 teams won at least 42 games, with New Orleans reaching 49 victories in the 23-24 season in order to finish 7th in the conference. The Pelicans lost the tiebreaker to Phoenix for the 6th seed. As for Phoenix making the playoffs outright and avoiding the play-in, well, the average win total for West teams who landed the 6th seed the previous four seasons, it was 47.5. And the Suns are 16 wins shy of beating that number. But, you know, they weren't even supposed to be in the playoff conversation this season. Phoenix has gone from an afterthought after trading Kevin Durant and buying out Bradley Beal and making Ott a first-year head coach. They've climbed as high as 5th in the West by playing aggressively and physically, with an emphasis on defending and offensive rebounding. Ott said, quote, "I don't think we ever had, like, what expectations are supposed to look like. I think we just wanted to bring guys in here that played the right way, that went about their business the right way, and they continued to get better. I think that's the part where we're at right now," unquote. Phoenix went 3-1 against two of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference, the East-leading Detroit Pistons, 1-1, and the New York Knicks, 2-0, and then there was a 3-3 versus the West top two squads, defending NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder, they were 1-3, and San Antonio, they were 2-0. The Suns have yet to play the Boston Celtics, who are second in the East. Suns forward Ryan Dunn said, quote, "Playing Suns basketball and keeping our identity as always. Come out and compete against every team we play and just focus on us," unquote. The Suns didn't have Jalen Green and Booker for their 108-105 loss on January 15th to the Pistons during that six-game road trip. Their biggest win came against Oklahoma City by the same score, as Booker nailed a three over two defenders with 1.6 seconds left, and that lifted Phoenix to a January 4th stunner. A month earlier, the Thunder had handed Phoenix its worst loss in franchise history, 138-89, and that was in an NBA Cup quarterfinal game on December 10th in Oklahoma City. Thunder All-Star Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the reigning NBA regular season and NBA Finals MVP, said about the Suns back on January 4th, quote, "Good team. They play hard. They play together. And in this league, when you play hard and play together every night, You give yourself a chance, unquote. Well, the Suns look to be full strength coming out of the NBA All-Star break. Grayson Allen, who was out with a right knee sprain, and Isaiah Livers with a left shoulder sprain, will be reevaluated after the break. Suns forward Dylan Brooks said, hey, quote, having a healthy team going into these last 2 months will be good for us, unquote. The Suns have had 17 different starting lineups, mostly due to injuries. So with Green back from a right hamstring injury that has sidelined him most of the season, Phoenix has to blend him into the mix. When Green said, when asked about developing team chemistry, quote, me personally, I don't think it'll take long just because we all got the same goal. When everyone has the same goal and trying to chase the same thing, it shouldn't take long. Off the court, we have a great camaraderie. We get along so well together. It's just a matter of just being us, unquote. So when the Suns get Green and Booker back, but we're down Allen and Livers, Brooks wasn't trying to use that addition and subtraction as an excuse for their February 7th loss to Philadelphia. Brooks said, quote, you can say that, but we're just plug-and-play players. We do what we got to do. On the defensive end is where we're lacking right now with our closeouts, our rebounding, and our rim presence, unquote. The Suns went 11-5 in January and posted the second-best defensive rating in the NBA at 108.1. So no wonder Ott won Coach of the Month. Phoenix has started February 2-4 with a defensive rating of 120.7 to rank 25th in the NBA this month. So if the Suns regain their defensive identity and stay healthy, they will remain in postseason contention, even though the league now has a much better understanding of how they play. Booker is the go-to guy, leading the team in scoring and assist, while Green brings an athletic dynamic of getting downhill and creating off-script offense. Brooks sets the tone and is having a career year, and Allen gives the Suns three-point shooting and another ball handler. Now, here are six more players that Phoenix needs to contribute to reach the postseason. First off, Mark Williams. The 7-footer has stayed healthy after 3 injury-prone seasons in Charlotte. He's had monster games and minimal ones. Colin Gillespie is having a career year to set himself up for a substantial payday, but he's got to remain productive against the enhanced defensive pressure. Royce O'Neal, the veteran forward, gives the Suns more than just the quickest catch-and-shoot three in the NBA, because at 6'8", O'Neal provides much-needed size at the four. And Jordan Goodwin, he's the team's best on-ball perimeter defender. The Suns also rely on his threes and ability to somehow win on the offensive boards at just 6'3". Then there's also Iguodaro. He has played long stretches at center because he can switch, handle the ball, screen, and finish. So how Ott utilizes him and Williams will be huge. And Ryan Dunn. The rookie, Rashear Fleming, looks ready for minutes, but Dunn is more experienced, even if it's just a year more. So now we're into March Madness. Phoenix's first game after the break is against the Spurs in Austin, followed by 4 at home versus Orlando, Portland, Boston, and the Lakers. All 5 of those teams are in the top 10 of their respective conferences. The Suns play 16 games in March, 9 of them on the road, where Phoenix's record is 14-13. The Bucks, whom the Suns will play twice in March, will likely be without their injured all-star Giannis Antetokounmpo for both games. Chicago, New Orleans, Charlotte, Indiana, Utah, Memphis, and Sacramento are the remaining 6 games in March. The Hornets recently won 9 straight, but the Pacers have the NBA's worst record, followed by the Kings, who have lost their last 14 games. If the Suns go, let's say, a game above or below 500 over their next 21 games, They will have either 42 or 43 wins going into their final six games of the regular season against Charlotte, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, and Oklahoma City. The Thunder, Rockets, and Lakers could already have their playoff spots locked up, and they might not need a win. The Bulls and the Mavs look like lottery teams. So, the Suns may be able to make a late push to land a top six seed to avoid the play-in, or secure a seventh or eighth seed to give them two chances to continue one of the NBA's most surprised seasons in the 25-26 season. And that was the article, Can the Suns Survive the Tough West and Make the Playoffs? From inside the sports section, we have an article about Diamondbacks baseball and the Cactus League. It's entitled, D-backs Defense Gets Past Disgusting Year. This was written by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic. Despite having the best offensive season by a shortstop in Diamondbacks history, Geraldo Perdomo came away from 2025 with something of a bad taste in his mouth. His defense was not up to his standards, and he vowed this week to be better. Perdomo said, quote, "For me, it was a disgusting season. Even if I was hitting good, it was something that did not make me proud," unquote. Defense has been a regular topic during the early days of Diamondbacks camp, which began on February 10th at Salt River Fields. For stretches last season, the club played sloppily in the field, further handicapping a battered pitching staff. Over the winter, the front office targeted defensive-minded upgrades, and both Perdomo and manager Torey Lovullo sound determined to make sure that this season unfolds differently. New third baseman Nolan Arenado is a 10-time Gold Glove winner. Free agent addition Carlos Santana won one of his own at first base. They now flank Perdomo and second baseman Ketel Marte on an infield that could be one of the better defensive units in the league. Lovullo said of general manager Mike Hazen, quote, "Mike did a great job of bringing in some really good athletic defenders, and we're going to be very good this year," unquote. Perdomo said, quote, "I think the defense is going to be special this year. I feel like we made a lot of mistakes last year, including myself. I feel this year is going to be way, way different with these two guys," unquote. Though some of his advanced defensive metrics viewed his 2025 season in a positive light, Perdomo saw things differently. He made too many mistakes, too many errors. He said, quote, "I'm just putting more focus on my defense than last year. I have to push myself. I have to push myself to be proud. Always my defense has been a part of my game. It's not right, it's not fair to the team that I performed that way on defense. I know this year is going to be different," unquote. Well, when Perdomo's comments were relayed to Lovullo, the manager's eyes lit up. He said, quote, "That makes me happy. He's accountable. He should be. I know it bothered him. It bothered me. It got to the point where it probably tested my relationship with him because I was on him so hard about tightening that up," unquote. Arenado might no longer be the best defender in the majors, but he has been firmly above average in each of the past three seasons. As for Santana, he has the second highest fielding run value per Baseball Savant among first basemen since the start of 2023, trailing only former Diamondbacks first baseman Christian Walker. Though the club made only modest additions to the pitching staff, it seems to be banking on a stronger defense helping offset that. Hazen said, quote, "We really wanted to solidify the corners for this team moving forward. From a run prevention standpoint, that's been the reason the last two seasons that we haven't made the playoffs. We wanted to make sure that wasn't the case going into this year." Lovullo said the plan this spring is to put players through more drills at game speed in hopes of playing sharp to open the year. That was an issue in the early weeks of last season. Lavulo said, quote, I think we're going to ramp up some of the intensity with some of the drill work from a defensive standpoint specifically. I couldn't ask the pitchers to do any more. I'm watching. Things are coming out hot. Things are looking really, really good. But from a defensive standpoint, I want to be a little bit more ready than we were last year, unquote. And that was the article, D-backs defense gets past disgusting year. Well, we're coming up on 31 minutes past the hour. It's time for us to move on over to the viewpoint section and read some opinions. In today's viewpoint section, the top of the front page says, Two Views, Access and Alternatives. What abortion debates in Arizona look like right now. And we're going to read one, and then we're going to read the other one. The first one is, Doctor refuses to let women be denied care. This was written by Dr. William Richardson as a guest columnist. For more than two decades, Arizona lawmakers have worked steadily and deliberately to make abortion harder to access. Waiting periods, mandatory in-person visits, telemedicine bans, each restriction framed as reasonable, each one pushing care farther out of reach for patients with the fewest resources. And when given the opportunity, some in our legislature showed us just how far they were willing to go, resurrecting a law written in the 1860s, before Arizona was a state, before women could vote, to ban abortion outright. That episode should have ended any illusion that these policies were about moderation or compromise. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And when the chance arose, abortion access was not merely restricted, it was eliminated. Southern Arizona felt that threat acutely. We are geographically large, medically underserved, and home to many patients who cannot easily travel, take time off work, or arrange childcare. When access is restricted in Arizona, Southern Arizonans are disproportionately affected. That reality is why the responsibility for protecting reproductive health care in Southern Arizona increasingly falls not on Phoenix or Washington, but on us, on Tucson. De Tucson. For Tucson. Tucson has long been a community that shows up when institutions fail. We value dignity, autonomy, and neighbor-to-neighbor care. When public policy breaks down, we build local solutions. And that is the spirit behind Choices Abortion Network, CAN. CAN was created to ensure that patients in Southern Arizona are not left alone when care becomes harder to access. At its core, CAN is a charitable organization, providing direct financial support to patients who need abortion care but cannot afford it. For many, that support makes the difference between receiving care and being forced to continue a pregnancy against their will. But CAN was never meant to stop there. Patient support without advocacy is fragile. If unjust laws remain in place, the need only grows. And that is why CAN also supports advocacy, because access is not secure unless it is defended. With the backing of CAN and its board of directors, I participated in litigation challenging Arizona's ban on telemedicine abortion care. Telemedicine allows patients, especially those in rural or medically underserved areas, to receive safe, evidence-based care without unnecessary travel or delay. Blocking it does not improve safety, it simply erects barriers. Earlier this month, the judge issued a preliminary injunction against Arizona's 24-hour waiting period and telemedicine abortion ban. For the first time in years, abortion care in Arizona can now be provided without arbitrary delay. For the first time ever, we are preparing to offer care by mail. Now, this is a moment of progress, but it is not without peril. While Arizona patients are finally beginning to benefit from expanded access, efforts are underway elsewhere to roll it back. Opponents of abortion have turned their attention to federal regulations, hoping to force the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to reverse course and reinstate outdated requirements for in-person dispensing of abortion medications, requirements that were lifted only after decades of research demonstrated their safety. In short, what one court gives, another could take away. This is what abortion access looks like in 2026. It is legal in some places, threatened in others, reshaped by litigation, vulnerable to politics, and dependent on community resilience. This moment calls for not just relief, but resolve. It calls for building infrastructure that can survive whiplash policymaking, for making sure that patients don't bear the burden of legal uncertainty, for committing not just to legality, but to real access. That is why local support matters now more than ever. CAN's model of community-rooted care and immediate support for patients paired with strategic advocacy is built for precisely this kind of moment, a moment where gains are real but fragile, where access exists but only because people have fought for it. Tucson is uniquely positioned to lead. We are generous, we are engaged, we believe in taking care of our own. Choices Abortion Network exists because Southern Arizona deserves both compassion and courage, support for patients today, and advocacy to protect access tomorrow. That is how we move forward, together. And that was the opinion piece entitled, Doctor Refuses to Let Women Be Denied Care. It was written by Dr. William Richardson, the founder of Choices Women's Center, president of Choices Abortion Network. He is a physician and a plaintiff in the abortion case. The second article is by Paul Boyer, a guest columnist. It's entitled, Court's Ruling Does Not Help Women's Health. Thinking about an abortion? Well, you're not alone. You don't have to take the life of your fetus through abortion. Pregnancy resource centers exist for just this reason. Places like Choices Pregnancy Centers in Arizona offer free ultrasounds and resources for expectant moms. This is what real, actual health care looks like in reality. It means caring for women before and after birth. Care during the pregnancy means prenatal care, checkups, ultrasounds to determine the health of the baby, how far along she is, ensuring the pregnancy is in the uterus and not ectopic, or even if there's a heartbeat and more. After birth, this means making sure mom has all she needs, including baby clothes, diapers, a crib, wipes, formula, and a car seat, along with how to install it properly. This is what real health care looks like. What's happening in the abortion industry is neither health nor care. Today, more than half of all abortions in Arizona are not surgical, but chemical abortions. This tracks nationally with 63% of all abortions now being chemical abortion, according to the Guttmacher Institute. While chemical abortion increased during the COVID years, it has increased further since the 2022 Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization ruling overturned Roe v. Wade and its approval by the FDA. With Arizona's recent Maricopa Superior Court ruling, no woman is legally required to get an ultrasound before obtaining a chemical abortion. This matters because the FDA's own insert notes, an expectant mother should not take the abortion pill after 10 weeks due to the additional risk to the woman. These additional risks, besides the obvious point that chemical abortion removes a fetus every single time, can be serious for mom. Indeed, emergency room visits coded as severe or critical increased 4,041% for chemical abortion between 2004 and 2015, according to a peer-reviewed study of Medicaid-eligible women, concluding that women who take the abortion pill will have more serious medical problems than women with surgical abortion and is significantly higher than women who give birth. And it gets worse. A more recent 2025 study by the Ethics and Public Policy Center that used life insurance claims analyzed 865,727 chemical abortions from 2017 to 2023 to examine the effects of chemical abortion. The findings note 10.93% of women experienced sepsis, infection, hemorrhaging, or another serious adverse event within 45 days following a chemical abortion. KFF, a nonprofit organization focusing on national health issues, calls the EPIC report flawed, noting that in 10 clinical trials with more than 30,000 participants, adverse effects occurred in less than 0.5% of patients. Now, chemical abortion consists of two pills. Mifepristone is the immediate cause of what kills the fetus, since it cuts off progesterone, the hormone essential for maintaining a pregnancy. This is the pill that proponents will say is safer than Tylenol. Hardly. Then there's the required follow-up pill, misoprostol, that removes any vestiges of the fetus from a woman's uterus. As if the physical harm to women isn't enough, there's also the emotional and spiritual toll. Sometimes such harm takes years, even decades, to materialize. So when considering an abortion, don't settle for those organizations that simply want to take your money and your fetus. Look for an organization that cares for you not only during pregnancy, but after. This is what real health care looks like. If you've already had an abortion, there are women just like you who are struggling. You can find hope and healing through talking about it with other women who know exactly what you are going through. No matter your situation, you are not alone. And that was the opinion piece entitled Court's Ruling Does Not Help Women's Health. It was written by Paul Boyer. He represented Glendale and North Phoenix in the Arizona legislature from 2013 to 2023, and he was a 2021 Arizonan of the Year. He writes a monthly column for the Arizona Republic. And those were the two opinion pieces under the main title, Access and Alternatives, on the front page of the Viewpoint section. I believe we have time for a couple of opinion pieces written by people like you and me in the section of the paper called The Letters to the Editor. Let's see what we can find in the letters. This letter is entitled Timing of Hobbs Investigation Questionable. Here's how the letter reads. So, the Republicans in the Arizona legislature have hired an outside law firm to investigate Governor Katie Hobbs about political contributions made to her campaign. Well, maybe this investigation needs to be done. However, it should be conducted in a bipartisan manner to settle the matter. It is hard not to see this action for what it is, a political hit job before an election. Surprise, surprise. As a registered Republican voter, I am so sick of the hypocrisy and lies of the Republican Party generally, and the Arizona Republican Party specifically. The Republican Party, for the most part, has turned a blind eye to the grifting, quid pro quo, and outright theft that is rampant in the current Republican administration in Washington. Yet they somehow feel that they have the legal and moral high ground. Voters are not stupid. These politicians need to be voted out and bring sanity back to government. Signed, Richard Rowe in Mesa. And this other letter goes like this. I just had to comment on Greg Burton's opinion piece, quote, time doesn't heal, but it gives us space to move on from loss, unquote. It was beautiful. It captures the feelings of grief in a way that I have never been able to articulate. I have struggled with grief on a daily basis since the passing of my son. It helps to hear how others deal with it. God bless you, Greg Burton. Signed, Jennifer Kruska in Peoria. And we've passed the 45-minute mark in the after the hour, so we're going to leave the opinion section and move on over to the entertainment section, and we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. And we will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. A sobering realization may hit you today. Are you finally seeing the truth of where you belong and where you don't? For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, what do you want to be known for? Contemplate the future of your legacy. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, make space for a spiritual shift. Enter the depths of contemplation. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, a heavy feeling may come over you today. Are you not able to define it? Grief does not always have a language. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, a relationship pattern may reach its point of no return. Are you over dealing with the same old issues? For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, question the systems of service that drain you. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, the need to live your joy can feel all-encompassing now. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, ponder your origin story. The time is ripe to detach. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, your nervous system may need a break. The noise may become too much. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, your values may be undergoing a complete overhaul. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, what you have outgrown becomes very apparent today. Set free this old version of yourself. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you craving a reset? Pull away from the world and retreat for integration. That was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. In the first letter, it goes like this. Dear Abby, I've been dating Rita for 4 months. We peck on the lips, hug, and hold hands, but we have had only one real kiss so far. Rita was first married for 22 years to an emotionally abusive man, and then remarried to a manipulative one. She said we were going too fast, and she wanted to slow down. I understood, and have exerted no pressure on her. Rita has canceled dates for various reasons and gone silent for a day here and there. She says she's not talking to anyone else. Neither am I. I have told her she is worth the wait. I have fallen hard for her and have serious intentions about her. Rita says she has strong feelings for me and that I treat her better than any man she has ever been involved with. But she doesn't know how to handle the feelings. How long should I give her to figure out what she wants this relationship to be? I'm not worried about sex or anything like that, but 4 months without even calling us dating or boyfriend and girlfriend, it has me worried that I am, for lack of a better description, wasting my time with her. What would you advise me to do? Signed, Taking It Slow in Virginia. And Abby responds, dear Taking It Slow, continue allowing your relationship with Rita to develop slowly. The woman has had two unsuccessful marriages, so it's no wonder she is slow to commit. If, after a year, 8 months from now, she still feels uncomfortable calling you boyfriend or companion, revisit the conversation and decide then if you have invested enough time. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, after reading so many horrible letters sent to you from people about their mothers-in-law, I feel compelled to write to you about mine. I met her 43 years ago when I was dating her oldest son, now my husband. From the moment we met, she treated me with caring, acceptance, and love. She and my father-in-law raised 5 amazing children, and they treated their children's spouses as if they were their own. She devoted her entire life to caring for and nurturing her husband, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Unfortunately, we just lost this beautiful woman at the age of 89, to a long and difficult battle with Parkinson's and dementia. We watched her sparkle slowly fade away, but we will carry her amazing legacy with us always. I hope I can be half the MIL to my children's spouses that she was to me. I also hope that all those who aren't as lucky as I was can find some common ground with their mothers-in-law, especially if there are children involved. I love you, Mom. Signed, Fortunate in New York. And Abby responds, Dear Fortunate, thank you for sharing this beautiful tribute to a woman who made such a positive difference in the lives of those she touched. Not only were you fortunate to be a member of such a warm and loving family, but she was also lucky to have a daughter-in-law like you. You can contact Abigail Van Buren in 2 ways. You can go to her website, dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. Now it's time to take a look at some comic strips. Well, in the comic strip Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, Beetle and Private Zero are walking through the barracks, and as they walk by one guy in the first frame, Private Zero says, I wish I had Plato's brains, as he's sitting reading a book. And they walk on by, and then Zero looks in the bathroom and he sees Killer's, he says, I wish I had Killer's sex appeal, because Killer's tying his tie and looking in a mirror. And they keep walking, and then Rocky is playing the guitar and singing, and Private Zero says, I wish I had Rocky's confidence. And then finally they get to the end of the barracks, and there's Cosmo, and he's working on the computer, and Private Zero says, I wish I had Cosmo's ambition. And Beetle says, well, hey, what about me? And Private Zero says, well, being in trouble all the time is not something I wish for. Just at that moment, Sergeant Snorkel slams open the door to the barracks and says, Beetle, and we know what's coming. That was Beetle Bailey. And then for Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, Dagwood's at the office. Mr. Dithers comes in, and first frame he says, Bumstead, you've really taken the cake this time. One more slip-up, and you're fired. And then he storms out of the office, and Dagwood goes, sheesh. And then in the next frame, Mr. Dithers is jumping up and down going, Marlene, I don't know if I can survive one more day with that bobblehead Bumstead. And Marlene says, well, just take it one step at a time, sir. And so Mr. Dithers sits down in his chair and he says to his secretary, well, anyway, what's on my schedule today? And so she reads it off to him. 9:00, review Dagwood's latest proposal. 9:15, have meltdown. 9:20, fire Dagwood. 9:35, cool down. 9:45, rehire Dagwood. And then underneath it, it says, repeat as needed. And Mr. Dithers, after hearing that, says, wait a minute. Isn't that yesterday's? And that was Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. And in the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, Earl is sitting in front of on a bench in front of a pie store. It's a bakery. And his friend says, do you like pie, Earl? And he thinks, and in the next frame he says, no. Well, I take that back. I do like some pies. I like blueberry, cherry, lime, mincemeat, apple, banana, and pumpkin. But other than that, I'm not much of a pie guy. And that was Pickles. Well, before we go, let's see if there are some celebrities celebrating a birthday today. Well, happy birthday to the singer Melissa Manchester. She turned 75 today. Actress Lynn Whitfield turned 73. Cartoonist Matt Groening turned 72. Actor Christopher McDonald turned 71. Singer and guitarist Gary Clark Jr. turns 42. Actress Natalie Morales turns 41. And rapper Megan Thee Stallion turns 31 today. Happy birthday to all of them. Well, I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the Reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, February 15th, 2026. Have a great day.